gonna do a couple of things. Kind of like a two-parter. Short though, Tim, but it's a two parts. And it does follow. We follow the lectionary. These readings follow the lectionary today, and I think they're pretty interesting, pretty good readings. But I'm first gonna mention the book of James, which is not one of our readings today. But in the book of James, chapter 2, verse 19, James, the brother of Jesus, makes a very interesting and important point. He says this, quote, "You believe that there is one God." Good. You know, good for you. "But even the demons believe that." So, is belief enough? Is faith enough? Not according to James. Now, I've heard different people over the years ask this question. Do you know Jesus? Ever hear that question? Maybe you've said it yourself. That's okay. Or does so-and-so know Jesus? I have to admit, it gives me a little pause, that question, because I wonder what they mean by know, K-N-O-W. Now, in the hands of a sincere, loving, and gentle person, I think that probably can be a great question. And a good conversation. You know, if by knowing Jesus, you're talking about understanding his true nature. You know, we talk about that pretty much. His nature as God, his infinite love and grace, you know, whose sole purpose was to come and seek and save us. But on the other hand, if the conversation is simply about saying, you must believe in Jesus because otherwise you're going to go where? To hell, you know? I don't know. I don't think that's knowing Jesus at all. That's just saying you believe in him. You have to believe in him. And guess what? Even the demons do that. In our gospel reading today, we find Jesus and his crew on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. And as soon as they stepped ashore, they encountered, guess what? A demon-possessed man. Okay, now think of this. Think of this. This guy was so bad that the local people had chained him hands and feet and had him under guard. Right? We just heard that from Kieran. And yet, he broke the chains and escaped. You think this guy was maybe dangerous? Out of control? What do you think? Yeah, right? Okay, so let me ask you this. Seriously. Why wouldn't they have just killed this guy? Right? If he was that bad? A maniac? Back in those days, why wouldn't they have just gotten rid of this guy? Well, maybe the answer is because he was someone's son, someone's brother. Maybe this guy was loved. I don't know. Maybe they were trying to save him somehow, just somehow. Think of this. Consider this. Maybe his family, his friends, maybe just one person was praying for this guy. Because all of a sudden, think of this, all of a sudden, Jesus shows up. Right? Right there. On the opposite side of the Sea of Galilee, opposite from where he would normally be, Jesus shows up right there, boom, to this guy. Pretty nice coincidence. Seems like an answered prayer, doesn't it? Somebody was praying for this guy, I think. And notice right away, as soon as the demon saw Jesus, he knew who he was. He even knew his name. Verse 28. What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? You can tell from that verse, not only did the demon believe who Jesus was, he believed him. He believed in him. He also knew that Jesus had come there for him. What do you want with me? He says. And then here comes the all-important question. The demon believed in Jesus. That's obvious. But did he really know him? Know his true nature? The story is so clear, it's yet another example for us of the nature of God and Jesus. You wonder how you can miss it. Here it is. The demon expects Jesus to do what to him? Torture him. Remember? The demon expects Jesus to, this guy, to torture him. I beg you, don't torture me. No, let me ask you again. Is that story telling us that you can believe in Jesus and not really know him? I mean, not even come close to knowing him, right? Jesus wasn't there to torture anybody. Jesus is not there to torture him. He's there to save. He's there to cure. He's there to answer somebody's prayer, maybe the man's prayer, and return that man to his family. That's what he was there to do. Not there to torture anybody. Verse 39 says, "Return," Jesus is saying to him, "return home and tell everyone how much God has done for you." That's what he came to do. That's it. And that's the difference between just believing, and actually knowing the true nature of Jesus. Okay, that was part one. Now we're going to segue a little bit into part two of today's lesson. It's different, but definitely related. Again, these are all tied to today's lectionary. So don't blame me if you don't like it. Blame the lectionary. You can blame me too. I really don't care. It's okay too. Okay, now, when Jesus first encountered this unfortunate man, this demon-possessed man, the demon was, quote, shouting at the top of his voice. Okay. Now, he was shouting with his loud voice, with hostility and vitriol, and of course, very limited, if any, actual substance and knowledge about Jesus. And this is, in fact, an example of something that we find commonly throughout the Bible. Loud and violent voices, always ill-informed, just like the demon-possessed man. Very common throughout the Bible. And most commonly, often, sometimes it's an individual demon situation, but very often, it's violence that is coalescing into a loud and destructive, always self-righteous group of some kind, usually like a violent mob or some form of a movement. And the loudness of these mob voices can cause groups, large and small, to lose their ever-loving minds entirely, at least for a while. We talked about this before. The loud mob voices in a society can really gain traction. It can gain some traction because it's sort of an energizing force on the one hand, whether it's due to, you know, sincere passion, sincerely held beliefs, that's absolutely common, Or just an adrenaline rush with some people, and that's happens too, on the one hand. And on the other hand, becomes very intimidating and almost a bullying type of a force, no doubt about it. It can be a bad experience. Now, movements like this are not always bad. I'm not saying that. It's a matter of perspective. I get that. And we've said here before, we need to ask ourselves, is that love? Does that look like love? Our own St. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13:1, chapter 13, verse 1, quote, "If I have not love, I'm just a loud gong," right? A clanging cymbal. So we need to watch out for the loud, violent noise, the noise of the mob. Listen to their words, look at their actions, and ask ourselves, is that love? Does that look like Jesus? And yeah, yes, it can get tricky, maybe confusing. And there can be different perspectives, different points of view from reasonable people, no doubt about it. Does the Bible condemn all violence? No, no, not at all. The Bible condemns self-righteous mob violence. It does that. But the Bible repeatedly endorses, encourages, and I would say glorifies self-defense. Our psalmist today writes in chapter 44, verse 5, quote, "Though through you, God, we push back our enemies. Through your name, we trample our foes." I mean, King David wrote repeatedly about how God would defeat those who plot against him. Now, the loud and violent mob, the loud and violent mob is something different. And in the Bible and throughout history, their hatred requires a central and simple focus. It requires something that has been called a scapegoat. Always a person or a group of people to hate and to blame. It requires a scapegoat. And 2,000 years ago and 6,000 miles away, the mob, loud and completely ill-informed, found their scapegoat in a man named Jesus Christ. Now sometimes we think we can only find the true nature of God in the New Testament, right? In the person of Jesus. And I would say that's the best place to find him. That's true. He's the best example. But it's also there waiting to be found in the Old Testament, throughout the Old Testament. In our first reading today, we get a fabulous lesson on everything we've been talking about so far. Now listen to this. This story is from the book of 1 Kings. We don't go there too often. This is from 1 Kings, probably circa 900 BC or thereabouts. The prophet Elijah, now Jane's not here, that's her favorite prophet, no Jane. The prophet Elijah is about to have a close encounter with the Lord on Mount Horeb. Now here's a quick side note. Almost the exact same thing happened to Moses, same place on Mount Horeb, 400 years prior. In both cases, both Moses and Elijah were told that God was about to pass by. For Moses, God's glory. You may remember this verse. I love it. I've said it very many times. For Moses, God's glory was revealed to him, not in his strength and power, but in his goodness and mercy. That's Exodus 32 or thereabouts. I didn't write it down, but it's a great verse, great story. Now for Elijah, in our reading today, God is not found in the wind that tore apart the mountains or the loud earthquakes or the God, and God was not found in the all-consuming fires. No. God was found in the gentle whisper. What a great story, right? And a great lesson. So in closing, in Proverbs 15, verse 1, King Solomon, Mr. Wisest Man That Ever Lived, right? He said this, a gentle answer turns away wrath. And God is found there. God is found there in a gentle answer, the gentle whisper. He's not wrath. He turns away wrath. He's the opposite of wrath. He's not found in the loud violence of the mob. He's found in the silence of the cross. There he is. And he does not come seeking us to torture us. To think that is to miss completely the nature of Jesus. God's glory is his goodness. He seeks us to save us and to help us find our way home. Amen.